Let's get some work done here. Because there's nothing on this afternoon. I want to see on TV, but that's enough.
Until 6:30.
Welcome. It's good to see everybody. Great group. So let's get started with our introductions. And we'll start down this end.
Ryan Beck, I'm filling in for Robert Groh today.
I'm Brad D. with the legislature.
Carlton Christensen with Sully County, filling in for Mayor McCallies.
Derek Timothy, Bluffdale City.
Andrea Pearson, WFRC staff.
Michael Jensen, Salt Lake County.
Hannah Long, South River City.
Mayor McFarland, Sun staff.
Lynn Harvey, North Salt Lake.
Brett Milburn, Davis County.
I'm Dolan Sandy. I'm filling in for myself today.
I'm Andrew Gruber with WFRC.
Bill Applegard, Griffith City.
John Petroff, Davis County.
Herman Green, Herman City.
Brent Marshall, Grantsville City.
Shane Marshall from UDOT, filling in for Carlos
Posadas. John Barber, Morton County.
Mike Freeberg, Salt Lake City, filling in for Mavis Kuski.
Randy Lewis, Bountiful.
Bob Stevenson, Lincoln City.
I'm from Perry City, representing Bob Sullivan County.
Evan Curtis, Governor's Office.
Kathy Silski, WFRC staff.
Kathy Van Zandt, Bruce, Utah.
Jason Ely with the CIS.
Roger Borgman from Utah for Better Transportation.
Ken Latham, North Salt Lake City.
John Hiskey, Sandy City.
Matt Sibyl, UTA.
Ted Acker, WFRC staff.
Ted Knowlton, Council staff.
Muriel Sojamel, WFRC staff.
Tim Reese, KHSA.
Robert Baumgartner, Council staff.
Heather McLaughlin, all 30 parking staff.
Wayne Bennett, Council staff.
Steve Call, Federal Highway Administration.
Hi, New York, Heather, parking staff.
Alison Jones, WFRC. Denise Davenport, WFRC staff.
Julia Collins, WFRC staff.
I think it should be on behalf of the team up today.
Kathleen, WFRC staff.
Scott Hess, WFRC staff.
Jim Hesbitt,
WFRC staff.
Mr. Gibson just came in. It's not a test, we're just introducing us. I guess I just introduced you.
Sorry, Brett. Sorry, Kerry just came in. He's your favorite. He's my favorite
Anyway, it's great to have everybody here.
At least I know my name.
To see all your smiling faces. When you're dealing with politics today, there's not a lot of smiling faces. So. let's move on. Item 2 is the chairman's report, and this is... let's do the consent calendar.
Motion to approve, Mr. Chair.
Second. We have a motion and a second. Any question on the consent calendar? All in favor?
Aye.
Thank you. Chairman's report. We've got another spotlight, which was really great last month or whoever it was that we're.
Whoever it was, did he just say that?
Yeah. Whoever it was.
Because
those guys up north. but I'm going to turn the time over to Commissioner Milburn to get us started on this.
Well. Come on, gents. The rest of my team here. Yeah, that would be you. Mayor. And Mayor. And this is, we're the three musketeers, not the three stooges.
We appreciate that clarification.
And, last time we met Weber County and Mr. Gibson and his folks gave a nice presentation, and it's all good to learn about Weber County. But in the words of the great Commissioner Dan McConkey, Davis County is the center of the universe. So we can talk about the center of the universe here for a minute. And in one particular area of Davis County, we're the center of the universe, and that's South Davis County. And as many of you probably know, that Davis County is the smallest county out of the 29 in the geographic size, but we're the third largest in population. And we continue to grow, and we're have often been known as that bedroom community, but I'm here to tell you that we're not sleepwalking towards the future. We're wide awake and becoming quite the player on the scene, and we're excited about the things that are going on. And we want to take just a couple minutes and spotlight particularly South Davis County, and I have with me here Mayor Randy Lewis from Bountiful, that I think we ought to give him a round of applause for surviving a tough city council meeting the other night. And he got a unanimous vote out of his council that shocked me, but that's fantastic.
That's great.
He'll probably touch upon that as part of his remarks. And then, of course, there, Mayor Len Arvey from North Salt Lake, and which is the entrance into Davis County. And one of the things that we want to focus on here for a minute is a project that you'll find on this, right? So what you... Awesome, that's going all technical here. But is the bus rapid transit line. It's the Davis Salt Lake Community Connector, and this is something that we've been having discussions on and working towards for a number of years now, and we're at a point where we're ready to take it to the next phase and do the environmental work, and we'll be in the meeting and strategizing on how to fund that. But to give you just a little background, this is a bus rapid transit line connecting Salt Lake City and South Davis County up through Bountiful. And it currently sits on phase one of the RTP. And we anticipate it'll generate over 3,000 daily trips for average weekday riders. So, and the beauty of what's transpiring in Davis County is oftentimes, and historically, Davis County has been the outflow to Salt Lake. And a lot of downtown Salt Lake workers come from Davis County, from South Davis County. But with some of the other things that we have going on in economic development and whatnot, we're finding people have a desire and businesses are coming into Davis County. So it really becomes a very much needed two-way line of transportation. And of course, in addition to relieving congestion on I-15, many of you probably experienced that bottleneck right there at the Beck Street I-215 South Davis area. This will have a tremendous impact on relieving that congestion. And of course, something that we're all familiar with is the air quality improvement that a project of this nature can provide. This map here kind of gives you some reference of where we're talking, where the line will be. Some of it in dedicated corridor, some of it in shared corridor. And then the overall elements, it's a corridor-wide land use plan. But it's a very long, narrow corridor, and utilizing the form-based code, of course, and providing some travel choices, and it's also a real opportunity for some economic development opportunities. And with that, I'm now going to, now that I've teed that up, I'm going to turn the time to the two mayors, starting with Mayor Lewis. And we can talk about Bountiful and the impact that this project will have on your community.
Thank you, Mayor. I'm not sure I can talk to anyone right now unless they're yelling, or Commissioner. I'm not sure that I
would want to be a mayor.
Yeah.
That's what you meant.
I'm not sure that I can talk without people yelling at me at the same time. So we're excited. Part of the presentation today was really based on a lot on moving our city hall from where it is presently downtown in Bountiful, and it really is going to be fantastic. And yes, we had some opposition, but I think if you don't have opposition to some of these things, I wonder if it's really worthwhile. You know, you need to have some people that are on both sides. And so it actually worked out very well, and it was a tough fight. But the bus rapid transit coming from Salt Lake City through that Renaissance Center, maybe if anybody knows Bountiful, that's the physician's offices that are by Five Points. Five Points, where the mall used to be, and where we have a large piece of ground that needs to be developed. But because we don't have very many places in Bountiful to develop, we're very careful as to what goes there. And now, with bus rapid transit, it's very important that those two mesh and melt together to be an enhancement to the bus rapid transit system. And so that large piece of property, we're looking really at that next, not this minute. But because City Hall, which was on the city campus in green that you can see there, we will now be able to take those 4 acres and with mixed use, make a wonderful spot for lots of mixed use. One thing that has going for it, it has Smith's that's in walking distance. It has a drugstore that's within walking distance. It has the police next door. And I'm going to have another, let's see, what is it at the top button here? This one? That's just another picture of the Renaissance Center. I might look down here at Bountiful in a minute, but this place is a wonderful place when you look at the bus rapid transit system to come, because it has all of the elements that they need, including we have the library there presently from the county, and also senior services. So we have a lot of things right there that will enhance this whole system. And that just really kind of covers what I talked about there. Just a picture of the city campus. Although the bus rapid transit system doesn't go onto our main street, it hooks in in many ways with walking and trails and a lot of other amenities that we now have in Bountiful and we're looking forward to. So the bus rapid transit system, the Wasatch Front Regional Council, and their help with us is this is really a good thing for us. So we're looking forward to it.
Thanks, Randy. I'm Mayor Harvey with North Salt Lake, and I actually wanted to talk a little bit about the local planning grant that we got and where we're going. And to do that, I want to explain a little bit about our city, North Salt Lake. You can see that we're not a big city. We have about 2 or 3 miles north to south and about 4 miles east to west. We have about 20,000 residents. Spent between half and half. You can see the Eagle communities on the east side and Foxborough, which is a master plan on the north. In between, we have an industrial park. In our industrial park, we have about 8,000 jobs and people that work there. I highlighted some parts issues that we have with the city that, as long as I have you in front of us, I thought I'd bring up. One of the issues we have is east-west travel, and that's starting to be a big problem as we've had populations on both sides. In South Davis County, other than the freeway interchanges, I think there's only one bridge over the tracks. Everything else is an at-grade crossing, which is a big problem when you have a front runner coming by at 75 miles an hour and you have Union Pacific blocking their streets for long periods of time. We're a south-oriented city. We're 10 minutes to downtown Salt Lake and about 10 minutes to the airport. And so a lot of what we do is actually oriented towards Salt Lake. Here, one of the things that you'll notice is on to the east and to the south and to the west, there's really no population at all. And that means that if you're trying to get commercial in our city, you're going to have a hard time doing it because they want rooftops around it. That hasn't stopped our city council from going ahead and zoning that in the hope that you get commercial in. But when you zone something for a use that isn't there, isn't going to come, this is kind of what you get. Now, the whole corridor, we have two corridors that run through our city. One's Redwood Road and one is Highway 89. They don't all look this bad, but you can see that we have significant problems along both corridors. Vacant land, underutilized buildings, landscaping problems. It just doesn't look good. And so even though we have wonderful communities, I'm sure many of you have been to Eaglewood Golf Course and seen our community there. Foxborough is probably the best master plan community in Davis County. Our corridors are terrible. And so we, here's another couple of pictures that you can see. We asked for a grant, and the area that we're focusing on is the area of Highway 89 and Center Street. Which we, the one thing you would notice in the other picture also is we really don't have a town center. So we wanted to do a master plan and improve that. Some of the things we wanted to do, and I can't see them all, but we wanted to improve underutilized property. We wanted to improve walkability, bike traffic, and whatnot. And as we looked through things and studied things, it became obvious to really about all we can do there, expect to have developed there, is high-density housing. Many of you are mayors, and if you have had a high-density project come into your council, there's always just a lot of opposition to it, and that was the same with our council. And so we wanted to make sure that if we're going to do high-density housing there, that we had ways to at least mitigate some of the problems. One of the things we did is we looked at parks and trails, and you can see on here the open space, the parks, bike lanes, trails that we planned on putting there. And some of the other things we wanted to do was actually look at the urban design that we would have. You can see we laid out kind of a streetscape for Highway 89 and our Center Street. It's another example of what we have there. We took some pictures of potential streetscapes that we'd be interested in and how we'd want them to look. And we had some lighting standards. We got the grant about a year and a half ago. And over the last year and a half, as we've gone out and approached developers, you've seen kind of the projects that were there and what we had before. These are the projects that we had coming in. So this is 250 homes. I don't know if you know where Hughes RV is. It's where all the vehicles are there. This is a project that's coming for Hughes RV. You can see the improved architecture that we have there. This is a project that's coming in across from our city hall. Again, it's high-density housing. It's mixed use. We have some commercial in there. But it looks nice. It's amenity-rich, and we think we'll have that. And these are some of the condos that have come in the corridor already. And so we've been a city since 1948. We've had people driving through our city for years. You kind of saw what it was like before, but thanks to the planning grant that we had, the work that they did, the vision we were able to create, you can see some of the projects that are coming through right now. These are actual projects from developers that have come forward in the last year and a half. So I think this is these projects are high density, they're close to locations, they're going to reduce route miles traveled. So I think they meet the Wasatch Front's goals, and they certainly meet our city's goals. And you can see we have a lot of housing here. If we get bus rapid transit, it will certainly be helpful for our projects there as well. So anyway, thank you.
As you can see, there's a lot going on and a lot of great vision happening and putting that vision into practice. Well, one thing that I neglected to mention and why this BRT line is so important to this area is, of course, we're blessed to have Frontrunner that comes through Davis County, but folks on the south end of the county, Frontrunner doesn't really impact them in a way other than providing, maybe opening up the I-15 a little bit for those folks, because The closest station, or the furthest south station, is located in Woods Cross. But the BRT, with the, as pointed out, with the number of folks that are going into downtown Salt Lake area on a daily basis, that BRT becomes a, another vital and important way to move those people in on and get them out of their vehicle. So that's a little bit of what's going on. Any questions that anybody might have? Well, razzle dazzle, do that good, Carlton?
But it, obviously, it's always money, but I mean, what's your next step in your BRT sort of progression? And,
next step is we're at the point where we need to do the environmental work, get some environmental documentation, and it's been estimated that study is about $1.2 million. Ken? Oh, that's right. You're not going to be there. Why didn't you fund it before?
Well, is there anything else you need?
Yeah, well, I'm telling you. No, but we've been working collaboratively with between the cities in the area, UTA, UDOT, and the county, and Salt Lake City and Salt Lake County, and trying to strategize on how we raise those funds and move it to the next level. And we have been to the legislature in the past and hoping to take another one and ask for a little bit of help there too. So we feel like this has a great regional benefit. And like I said, it's, it always comes down to dollars, but we feel like this is a very valuable project and will have a tremendous impact on the area here.
Hey, on, you showed your streetscape on 89, or you should come down there.
Uh-huh.
I'm sure UDOT owns that.
UDOT owns part of it. They own a lot of it, but there are issues where it's going to be too narrow in some places. I think in North Salt Lake it would be less of a problem than probably in Bountiful and some other areas, at least on the southern end. We have some partnerships and stuff that we'd like to keep, but I think it's a fairly wide corridor that you can do.
And one thing that's also from an economic development standpoint, we have partnered at the county level, have partnered with North Salt Lake and put that corridor that stretches at 589 in a CDA. And I drove it just yesterday and was very pleased to see that there are parcels that are already under construction and things already happening. So I'm assuming it's a lot of these housing complexes and they will definitely need a more efficient transit option here sooner than later.
So. Part of our sales pitch. We've already sold as many as you want to deliver.
Absolutely. So. If there's no other questions, we appreciate the opportunity to spend a couple minutes and talk about what's going on. Andrew?
Sure.
Is this the softball that you're going to log in?
I'll pitch to you all day long if you want. I actually just wanted to note the commissioner and the mayor's mentioned having applied for a grant where assistance was provided. So the program that Mayor Arby was talking about is the Transportation and Land Use Connection, which I think you all know is a program that we have created in conjunction with our partners at the counties, UDOT and UTA, so we can all collaborate together and help provide assistance to you in thinking about how do you develop, how do you deal with the pressures that you have. And it's worth noting that today is actually the deadline for letters of intent to come in, so nobody should like scramble out of here and get one together. Presumably we've already received a lot for that program as well as the other funding programs that the council has available. So we have these Transportation Land Use Connection planning activities and assistance, and then that actually leads into funding programs with STP, CMAC, and TAP. We love our acronyms, but resources that are actually available to communities to implement these projects. So we'll be reviewing all of those letters of intent and then going back out over the next few months, working with the applicants working with our partners, and then full applications will be due for those programs in January. And our staff is here. If anybody has any questions about that, either after this meeting or at any point, we're all more than happy to work with you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Mayor. Just a comment. We were in a discussion earlier with the Conference of Mayors in Salt Lake County, and I wanted to tell you how fortunate we are in this state to see what's happening in the state. I think it starts at the top with leadership from the governor's office and legislature, and then the vision that we have as local elected officials to do this, and working in conjunction with our business community. There isn't any state that I could think of right now that's seeing happen what we're happening. Michael Jensen and I sit on the CUP board, and believe me, it's not happening out in the rural right now. They're just not seeing this. They're still struggling to recover from the recession. But we are fortunate. Sometimes people say you're so lucky. I don't think luck has a lot to do with it. I think you can make your own. But we're fortunate because of leadership that all of you have demonstrated. So thank you very much for me being and my family to be part of what's going on right now. The next item is the nominating committee. The bylaws state that every 2 years, and even numbered years, the chairman appoints a nominating committee to recruit and nominate the council chair and vice chair. The nominating committee has one representative from each of the Wasatch Front six counties, and the council will vote at our meeting in January for our new chair and vice chair for our next two-year terms. I am appointing myself because I'm so brilliant.
I think it's just said
I'm supposed to do it. So. Commissioner Gibson from Weber County, from Davis County, Commissioner Petroff, from Box Elder County, Mayor Cronin, of Coahuila, Mayor Marshall, and from Morgan County, John Barber, Councilman Barber. So. That will be our committee, and we will meet behind closed doors and draft whatever wants to happen. So.
Following all appropriate rules.
Yeah.
Yes.
Thank you. All right. Thank you. I'm gonna move something up on the agenda before we move forward now. And first of all. Mayor Lewis is here substituting for Mayor Cicchini today to give a report, and he has to go put fires out in the city, and so we're going to give him the time to give our air quality report.
Thank you. Two or three more. Thanks, Chair. Yes, we met a week ago with the Air Quality Committee, and there are three items I want to report to you quickly on. One. Steve Meyer of the Utah Transit Authority reported on transit-oriented development here along the Wasatch region, coordinating housing and employment development with high-capacity transit service reduces auto trips. And because that is our bailiwick with the air quality, that was important and it was interesting. And it does help our air quality. We also had a presentation addressing new federal ozone standards. And the last, I think, really important thing for all of you to know is that the Air Quality Committee is going to modify the way we meet in 2017. And rather than having regular committee meetings, air quality issues will be addressed as standing agenda items with the Growth Committee agenda on those same days, but earlier in the day. I think we meet maybe at 11 or 10 on those days.
9:30, the Regional Growth
Committee. 9:30, Regional Growth Committee. And this will allow the sharing of information with a broader group of communities and stakeholders. The Air Quality Committee will still meet as needed. So we'll meet when either we see that there's a very specific thing we need to work on or to evaluate the effectiveness of reporting this only to the Growth Committee. So the packets that were sent out today's council meeting included a memo explaining this in more detail. And does anyone have any questions? Anything, Andrew, that you need to add?
No.
Any questions? before the fire gets any bigger.
Thank you, Mayor. Appreciate you coming to support that. The next item that I have is we want to recognize some of our outgoing members and talk about the number of years that they've offered their services to us as the members of the Wasatch Front Regional Council. Logan Wild, our council member from Morgan County, has graduated, is that the right word, to bigger and better things, in that he will be taking his place in the legislature. I don't know if he has an opponent, does he?
Yes.
He does. Well, he's going to win. So.
No. Yes.
And he was a member of our Transportation Committee, Commission, the Regional Growth Committee, the CDBG Policy Committee, and we want to thank him. He's not available with us today. He's busy, and so thank him. And the next is Commissioner Bell from Weber County. Been with us since 2015 as a member of Transcom and JPAC. Commissioner's not with us today, but we thank him also. And then I'm going to ask for the next two to say a few words for us. But next is Commissioner Petroff in Davis County. Served as vice chair in 2006, 2007 and 8 as chair, 2009 through 16 as a member, and also chair of the Regional Growth Committee from 2009 through 16, a member, and also chair of the Regional Growth Committee as a member of the Air Quality and the JPAC Committee. You've done a lot. So, Commissioner?
Well, I was thinking back. It was I first ran for city council in 1998, and I think the first question I remember anybody asking me was I in favor of the Legacy Highway? I live clear out west in the very west part, northwest corner of Davis County, and I think we're like 14 years into an EIS now. I don't know how long it's been, but I think that Randy Jeffries has built a career out of trying to get this darn EIS done. Okay, but you know, it's the one thing I've learned about transportation is that it's not instant gratification. You just have to stay with it, get your ducks in a row, and do it. But this opportunity has been great for me to meet so many wonderful people, and to when Mayor Dolan talked about things going on in Utah that don't go on everywhere else, I do believe it's because we work on every level together. You know, it was that's the part I don't think the everyday person doesn't realize, is that, you know, coming into these rooms and meetings and meet with the mayors of Salt Lake City, or if we go to JPAC, we'll meet with the folks from Utah County or even Washington County, Cache County, and finding that there are great people serving all over. I've always said that you'd have to be a pretty crummy servant not to do a good job, because you have so many great people out there carrying the water for you. So I've really enjoyed it. It's been a great, great experience for me. And I feel like I've gained 10 times more than I've ever given. So, thanks.
Thank you for your service. Next is Representative D. Brad and I go back to when we were teenagers. We just finished high school, and I was elected, and he was...
No, I was born when you were elected.
Well, it says here that in 1994, you were a member as the mayor of Washington Terrace. I remember that. And not that I remember a lot anymore, but I remember that. And from 1995 to 1996, the vice chair, and from 2014 to 16 as a member representing the legislature. And again, I'd like to give you an opportunity to share anything you'd like with us.
Well, thanks, Mayor. I'm not sure a lot of people in this room, you know, around this table, were back when you and I were graduating high school. But even back to when we first started serving on Wasatch Front. And I said this to Andrew a few times, and I want to pay it as a compliment to what's happened in Wasatch Front. But there was a time when I was serving on Wasatch Front from Washington Terrace as the mayor, where I entered a situation where we were a group of people that called ourselves the Wasatch Front Regional Council, sitting on that board, but every one of us went into those meetings in a defensive mode, trying to fight for what was best for our city or our area. And I watched that happen for a few years, and I'm a fairly outgoing person, and I thought, this is wrong. We ought to be getting together and finding how we can help each other achieve what we need, and obviously we hope our turn comes around, but if we keep fighting against each other, none of us really wins. And the evolution, as I've watched that over the years, especially when I've been, I was mayor for about 10 years, and now in the legislature for about 14, and I watched that evolution of what it's come to be today, and what an opportunity for us. And me in particular is having that opportunity to watch that happen and helping in some of those projects. To watch a group like this come together of, and let me be candid, a lot of us, if you're a politician, you've got egos. There's a lot of mayors and a lot of commissioners and a lot of legislators that think we're pretty cool. And that we all want to do what's great, because we always like to compass these things and we really try hard. But when you get a group of people like this in the room with stakeholders, with Wasatch Front staff people, with even those people that sometimes challenge us every step we make, what a great evolution to watch what's happening today compared to what was happening back in 94 when I was there. I watched things happen, and I'm a cheerleader for what you're doing in your communities, whether it be in Davis or Weber or Salt Lake or whatever county, and I become a cheerleader for those things because I work so well with you on these committees, and we watch what happens. And I'm sure, as we watch these things surface, that there are some of us out there who say, wow, we really need that help in my city or my county. But on the whole, what an evolution. And I think a lot goes back to Andrew and your staff. What's happened over the last 10 years here? I'm just proud to be a member. And am I going to come back and sit out there and question what you do? Nope. So you won't see me again.
You're always welcome.
But I'll read about you.
Thank you so much for your service, Representative. And you have been a champion for local government at the legislature. We really appreciate that. Okay, we're going to do one more thing, and that is we're going to move to our public comment. I'm going to do that after a second. So anyone from the public like to address the council? Seeing none, thank you. We'll close that. And now we'll move into the next item, which is an update from Lincoln Church, from the Utah Association of Counties, on the BNC Road funding. And we're really pleased to see the League and the Association of Counties work through this issue. And
thanks, Mayor, for the time, and I'll try and be brief. Andrew said I have 5 minutes to talk about probably one of the most convoluted formulas that exist in transportation. First, let me start with a couple of thank yous. First, to the Department of Transportation. Shane, your staff has been absolutely phenomenal in running a whole series of numbers for us in terms of the various iterations we are looking at and coming up with a new solution for how we distribute local gas tax receipts. So thanks again for you and your staff and the support they provided. And secondarily, to the legislature, leadership has been phenomenal in providing some direction to both the Association of Counties and the League of Cities and Towns as to how they wanted to see this move forward, at least in the general sense. And more importantly, has come up with a significant amount of one-time money in order to help this deal come together. As many of you may recall, at the outset of 362, there was this grand hope that all entities would be able to participate in a 5-cent gas tax increase that was going forward. And we all worked very hard to make sure that 5-cent gas tax increase went through the legislature successfully. When it went on the books, what we realized is there was a host of entities that weren't going to receive any additional money, and in fact were going to lose money under the existing formula. Those entities were called the hold harmless entities, and based on the existing formula in state law, 11 counties in one city actually lost about $1.2 million with a 5-cent gas tax increase. I don't think anyone anticipated that. The sense was that we would all participate in about a 15 to 20% increase in gas tax with the 5 cents. So we came back in 2016 and ran HB 60, which was a bill to correct the problem. And in doing so, I think it is fair to say at this point that we all agreed in concept What we didn't agree to is what it actually meant in terms of actual dollars in people's pockets. So at the outset, I think we all kind of agreed that these entities should participate in some of the growth. Where we had some disagreements that came out once we started running numbers as to what extent they should participate in the growth. Those 11 counties had not seen much growth since 1996-97 and wanted to capture a bunch of that growth. But in doing so, it was a huge shift in funds, about a $10 million shift from the rest of the entities participating in the fund to those 11 counties. With that $11 million shift, everyone else took a little bit of a hit. That wasn't anticipated, so we came back at the desires of both the Association of Counties and the League of Cities and with the support of leadership to come up with a new solution. So what does that new solution look like? I'm going to try and stay as kind of 30,000 foot as possible, and if you have questions, we can go into the details. The nuts and bolts of it are this. We will guarantee every entity in the state, on average, will get about a 17.5% increase in their gas tax receipts from 2015. So in your fiscal year 2017 budgets, you will be seeing about a 17.5% increase. I must emphasize that's on average. It's based on a formula that's run through the entire system. So there are some entities that may get 14 or 15, or some that may get 20. But on average, every entity will get about a 17.5% increase. We're in the final iterations of numbers with UDOT, so we should have those out to you in the next day or two, where we can give you the specific amount that you'll be receiving based on projections. But at this point, you can kind of bet on a 17% increase. For the hold harmless entities, at the with the help of the legislature, what we were able to do is make sure that those entities will participate in future growth. Under the old formula, no hold harmless entity participated in the growth in the fund. So as we purchase more gas, or more people move to Utah and we're buying gas, those entities didn't participate in any of that growth. So the change in the new distribution formula will allow those entities to participate in the average annual growth of the fund. So if the fund grows by 2%, the hold harmless entities will also get a 2% increase compounding going forward. So again, it allows everyone to participate in future growth in the fund, which was kind of a core principle that we wanted to make sure that was brought forward. Probably the biggest hurdle that we came up with was, what do we do with the current fiscal year? Cities had budgeted one thing, counties had budgeted another thing, and there was a significant gap as to what those budgets look like. As I mentioned, the legislature, this is where they came in, that gap was about $6 million. The legislature came up with $3 million to essentially make everyone, if you will, whole in the current fiscal year, so counties could finish out their budget year with the projections, the high end of the projections that they anticipated under HB 60. And they also agreed to hold the cities harmless, and that they would get what they were projecting under 362, which had them getting a larger amount of money. So, as I mentioned, it's about a $6 million gap. The legislature came up with three, and then the charge was cities, counties, you have to come up with the other three. The good news for us, we thought the gas tax was going to bring in about a 17% increase. It actually brought in roughly 20% because of people purchasing more gas. So there was a little bit of wiggle room in the fund that existed. So what we did is we took an additional $2 million off the top and essentially put that into this provision that makes sure that all entities are held harmless or held whole in the current fiscal year. So the cities get the amount that they were projecting and counties get the amount that they were projecting. So the legislature, in addition to abnormal increased growth in the transportation fund, came up with five of the $6 million. What that means is there's still a $1 million gap. And when you're talking about a $163 million fund, that's about as close as we could get. So there's about $1 million worth of fudge. But generally speaking, most entities will be getting what I described, which is a 17.5% increase that you can budget in your 17th fiscal year, while also making sure that you don't lose money in the current fiscal year, which you had budgeted earlier in the year. So that's the quick overview. If you'd like me to go over how the formula actually works, I can do that.
But I want you to draw it out.
But if that's the level of detail in which you need, I'm happy to stop there and answer any questions you may have.
Any questions for Lincoln?
The disparity issue, does it sort of rectify itself going forward? Or
it does rectify itself going forward in that the new formula allows for the hold harmless entities to participate in future growth. So as I mentioned, under the old formula, they didn't participate in growth since 1996. Under the new formula, they'll get the average annual growth in the fund compounding onto their distribution amount. So it does take care of this going forward, so we hopefully don't have to deal with this in future years. Last note, it's the political note. The governor has agreed to call a special session. It has not been called yet. There will be one item on the call in November, so November 16th is when he will hold the special session for this one item. In talking with UDOT and their comptroller, they plan on making disbursements of funds, because I'm sure all of you know they have been holding those payments dating back till June, until we came to some sort of solution. So payments will go out on the 17th of November to bring you up to date on current payments. So you can anticipate, as you're working with your treasurers within your counties or cities, that they'll get a full disbursement of payments come November 17th.
Any others? Thank you, Lincoln.
Absolutely.
Thanks for your efforts in the leagues. I think what the legislature did in this increase in gas tax, the way they've done it, is we will see growth. All of us will see growth in years to come, unless the oil market falls completely out, which no one knows for sure. Moving on, item 4, Budget Committee. Councilmember Jensen will take that.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Appreciate it. Budget Committee met 2 weeks ago. So we have two items. One is the audit. The other one, we need to amend the current budget that we're in. So the audit, Tim Reese is here. If anybody has any questions, the financial statements are on page 4. And then the findings are on page 44 and 45. There was one finding on state compliance. It had to do with posting of the minutes. At the time, we had two of our great former employees both retire at the same time. So there was a little hiccup on just posting them to the state website. So that's been the only finding that will be in the audit. The others are just the basic financial statements that show our position. Tim's here. Tim, I don't know if you want to say anything or if anybody has any questions from Tim, who did our audit. Tim?
Do you have any questions?
Do you want to have questions on the audit? Have you all read it?
I did, but...
just note that it was an unqualified opinion.
Right. Yeah. So the statements were accurate and unqualified. So,
thank the people. You have good people here. We appreciate them. You know, it's one retired and encouraging service. Andrew, most people. Good people to work with. And we appreciate it for the audit.
Great. Thanks, Tim. So, Mr. Chair, with that, I would move that we accept the audit for fiscal year 16.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Any more questions on the audit? Discussion? Seeing none. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you.
So, Mr. Chair, now we need to hold a public hearing and then take action on the amendments to the current fiscal year and the work program amendments. So, I would make a motion that we open the public hearing.
Second.
So we have a motion to open the public hearing.
Second.
And a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Here we are.
So in the public hearing, just so everyone knows, we had a little bit more money as carryover from last year than we had anticipated. They're just projects. They're all contractual. We're just going to roll that money over to this year. With those carryover, that will the work program just gets amended so that it reflects those carryover dollars. So again, contractual. That's about what was in the amendments. Lovett, do you have anything?
We did have two new sewer.
Oh, you're right. So Harriman City added an additional $200,000 for the Ochre connector that they supplied, and then the University of Utah, the Kim Gardner Policy Institute, $49,300 to help with some geographic data development. So thanks, Lovett. Those are the two additions besides the carryover. Anybody have any questions? Mr. Chair, I don't know if you want to ask for public comment.
Yeah, is there any public comment on the budget? This is a public hearing.
Seeing no public comment, Mr. Chair, I move we close the public hearing and approve the amendments.
Second.
We have a motion and second. Any more discussion? Seeing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you.
That concludes our business.
Thank you, Mr. Jensen.
May I just note, for any of the members of the council, and really any of the public also, if at any point anybody has any questions or wants to understand a little better any of the details of the budget or the audit, the staff, Lovett Baumgartner, our CFO, is here. We're always happy to talk with you in more detail if you'd like to.
Okay, moving to item 5, the Regional Growth Committee, Commissioner Petroff.
Mr. Chair, we have a couple of items to bring forward.
Today we're going to consider our adoption of our regional goals that we used to guide the work that the Regional Growth Committee does for the Wasatch Front Regional Council. And Ted's going to take about 10 minutes and brief you on these goals. One of the things I would say is we keep these goals up pretty good in the Regional Growth Committee. This is let Ted take some time here explain what we're doing and how these goals are going to affect us in the future. Ted?
Thank you, Commissioner. So, the adoption of goals is a big deal for us all. It says to staff, hey, what are the things that we are trying to improve through the work that we do at Wasatch Front Regional Council? Now, we're calling these the Wasatch Choice 2050 regional goals, and so they're a little bit different than the adoption of goals that we have done in the past. Wasatch Choice 2050, of course, we know the phrase Wasatch Choice 2040, that's the name for the effort that we all go through together to say, how can we coordinate the work that we do each in our individual spheres, in our city general plans, in our regional infrastructure, in the location of community colleges and regional and state facilities, how do we coordinate those things to maximize the benefit, to create the best outcomes? That's essentially the crux of Wasatch Choice 2040. Well, we looked at that. Wasatch Front Regional Council has been a partner throughout the history of Wasatch Choice 2040, and thought, well, a great way to really make sure that the regional transportation infrastructure also works towards those goals is to go ahead and integrate the regional transportation plan with Wasatch Choice 2040, now 2050. 2050 being the name for a from-scratch redo to the vision, building on grassroots feedback from each part of the metro area. So as you look at these goals, you will see goals that intend to do double duty. On the one hand, they are appropriate for a broad-based growth, open space, infrastructure vision, and at the same time, we will use them as goals for WFRC's work as well. And there's a little bit of a difference there, and I'm going to talk about that nuance a little bit. Commissioner Petroff talked about the process that we've gone through a little bit, and we've been considering these throughout the year. We started, that's actually 2016, early this year, we met with cities in what we call small area meetings.
And counties.
And counties, thank you so much. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I don't know why I do that.
You're biased.
And we asked them, you know, what are the things that you, if you got in your time machine and you went ahead 30 years, that you would hope that you would see us all benefiting from? What are those outcomes, desired outcomes? And we talked about those with communities. We took the list that emerged from that process, and that became an initial draft that we discussed with Regional Growth Committee. They refined it now over three different meetings. We've also had a conversation, as you may recall, with council about goals as well. Throughout this last draft, we had a first draft, we took a second draft, and we discussed it with our partners, UTA, UDOT, Regional. RGC Tax is a terrible acronym. It just basically means your planners, okay, local government planners. We also spoke with Mountain Land Association of Governments in Utah County and Envision Utah and got comments from them. We took that draft then back to the RGC just last week as well. And so the goals that you see in your packet are those that have been formally recommended to you by the Regional Growth Committee. One of the things that we did in that process is we looked at these goal statements, which are pretty broad. Livable and healthy communities an economic-related goal, economic and educational opportunities, access to them, manageable and reliable traffic conditions, quality transportation choices, safety-related, safe, user-friendly streets, housing, and affordability. How much does it cost people to live through their housing choices and affordable living expenses? The fiscal responsibility of our communities and infrastructure, ample parks, open spaces, and recreational opportunities, and a sustainable environment, including water, agricultural, and other natural resources, and lastly, but not leastly, clean air. And so we took those proposed goals and we compared them with Wasatch Choice 2040 growth principles, goal-oriented statements from UDOT and UTA, requirements that we need to follow from the federal government that are encapsulated in the FAST Act. And we also looked at things that we've decided together to work on in the unified plan. Green means there was some relationship. So you can see that there are some differences like this one, ample parks, open spaces, and recreational opportunities. But generally, this is covering a lot of the territory that we've seen before. Now, so why go broader? And again, the notion of going broader is that these are goals that intend to cover the breadth of Wasatch Choice 2050, meaning a vision that relates to growth, open space, and infrastructure overall. So broader than what you might say, well, a transportation agency and what a transportation agency might address in the details of that transportation agency's work. And so I'll get to that. So this is a calling back of the introductory language that is in your packet. The first part defines what Wasatch Choice 2050 is, the shared vision for the Wasatch Front. Then there's a statement that relates to the breadth of Wasatch Choice 2050. The following goals for Wasatch Choice 2050 can inform decisions made by Wasatch Choice 2050 partners, including transportation agencies, local governments, including counties, and other public entities and private sector and community-based organizations. And then because you as the board of WFRC are adopting this for WFRC, we have this statement here as well. The Wasatch Regional Council will utilize these goals to inform organizational activities, including the development of transportation, land use and economic development plans and projects. WFRC will measure the performance and impact of various plans and projects on several scales, on the region as a whole, on various sub-regions, and on vulnerable communities within the region, people that are dependent on transit or don't have a lot of income, for example. So, broad goals, but also a use for our MPO. And so what we are going to do, and we're going to, over the next handful of months, is we're going to take what you adopt today, and we're going to translate those goals for the WFRC work into evaluation criteria to help us understand different scenarios for how we develop transportation infrastructure and how growth unfolds, project selection and phasing criteria for transportation projects, transportation investment program criteria that shapes how applications for STP and CMAQ funding and the like are addressed, and then how we monitor progress, how we understand how the region as a whole is doing. So what I want you to know is today you'll be adopting regional goals, but we will be bringing this information, we'll be working mainly with the Regional Growth Committee to drill down into these kinds of questions. How do these goals actually affect the work at WFRC? And we will bring that also to you and share that information as well. So this will be an open and transparent process. In a minute, I'm just going to give you a sense of the first part of that, goals and how they relate to scenario evaluation criteria. What I mean by that is, how do we get a sense of how the overall transportation system works? How do we decide if it's effective or not effective? So these are the 10 goals in your packet that are recommended by the Regional Growth Committee. And I already read them through once, and so I won't do that and read them again, but I'll pause here and see if you have questions about these.
Yeah. So we had some healthy discussion on number 2 about adding health care. Was you going to talk about that, or what did we decide in RGC? Did we decide to do that in the detail under it, or did we decide to...
Yeah, and there was a good conversation about that. And we had a follow-up conversation with Mayor Cronin, who made the recommendation, and we chatted about it afterward. The reason why we thought let's stick with economic and educational opportunities is that those are things that affect the day-to-day lives of a significantly bigger population than those that go to a healthcare facility on an every single week basis. It's a smaller set of transportation in the region. That's part one. And the other part is that the statement right above it addresses health. And so we have something that gets at health. And so we could, for example, and we will, as we seek to understand how easy can you get to the destinations that you want to get to, we will include hospitals in that. It will be part of a metric, but in terms of a broad general goal statement, we didn't want to start getting into the arena where you're trying to address every significant kind of destination that people want to get at. Does that make sense? Okay.
I just wanted to make sure it was addressed since we had addressed it at length in the RGC.
Right, you bet. Thank you. Okay, and so we can certainly come back with other questions that you might have. Just to give you a sense of next steps, these are not proposed for adoption, but rather to just illustrate how these general goal statements then become translated into more specific kinds of measures that shape the work of WFRC. So if you think of Wasatch Choice 2050 land use and transportation scenarios, we might look at things like this, you know, areas with high walk potential, how much growth, how many people can easily walk to a destination, and the like. I'm not sure if it makes sense for me to go down this entire list, but so earlier on I noted the ample parks, open space, and recreational opportunities. Maybe we look at, because we're a transportation agency, we look at one, how easily people can get to open space. And because those scenarios are also a chance for you to take a look at, well, you know what happens to growth patterns over the next 50 years, you can explore that question of, do we want to explore more parks in our communities? Do we want to understand how many people can get to a park easily? So, and that's why we have access to parks, open space, and places to recreate per capita. Again, this is just an illustration of the kinds of things that we'll do over the next handful of months to translate general goal statements to something more specific. And so that is essentially my presentation, and I'm happy to answer any questions that the council has.
I have a comment, just an observation, but you know, all these are things we want to do. I'm just wondering if air quality should be listed so low on the priority list when the public is very attuned to air quality and the necessity of all of us to help address that. I'm not saying we put it somewhere specific, but somewhere where it fits better.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. I was thinking about that while I was looking at it. I mean, I don't think we're giving more value to any one of those goals. I mean, they're not like 1 through 10, but I do think that it really makes sense to get it up there where people realize that everything that you guys do is about trying to create the very best living environment we can have for everybody. And obviously, clean air is very important, so maybe you put it up in there, number 2, 3, or wherever you want it. But I think if it's on the bottom, it's just naturally has a tendency for people to think, well, yeah, clean air is there, but they just kind of added on. And I know that that wasn't the way it worked.
Mayor Petroff, or Commissioner Petroff, that's what I would say. None of them was numbered because that was what we was trying to eliminate. All we was trying to say was, these are some of the most important items that we feel need to be addressed. And certainly we can move clean air to the top, but there was no matrix of this is the top priority and this is the lowest priority. But these are all priorities of equal concern, and that's just kind of how they ended up.
Yeah, I understand. It's just public perception that, and I'm not saying where it should go. We'll leave the staff to put these in whatever order they want, but we're not going to necessarily rank them. I'm just saying, I think the public would appreciate more of what we're doing here and what we're proposing for our goals if air quality was at least elevated on the list.
Great. Well, so we will move it up. Staff. We will move it up and distribute that.
Sure. One comment as well. When we first looked at these goals, we were skeptical, maybe. But after conversations with WRFC and talking about the next step, we got fully behind these. We very much support these goals. We're looking forward to the next conversation about how you evaluate these in terms of a transportation plan. But we see this as a very good start. We're definitely supportive of this direction.
Thank you.
Back to you, Commissioner.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to make a motion that we approve these goals as they're presented here today.
We have a motion and a second. Any more discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you. Thank you, Ted.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I'd like to just make another comment that we're done for the year for regional growth, but we'd like to have another meeting. We're going to have one more meeting in December. We don't have a date specific yet, but probably a good possibility it will be the 8th. And during that meeting, we actually want to apply some of these principles that Shane was talking about, and we start to see how we can use these goals for evaluating. And during that type of a meeting will be a much more casual type of meeting. We'd like to invite all the members of the regional council, if they'd like to come to that. When that goes out, we'll send out that invitation. This will be kind of the real kickoff of this next great planning effort that's going to take place. I think about all the work that went into the 2040 project and all the what a great quality effort that was and a great product. So we don't want to shortchange anybody. We want to make sure everybody has their chance to be involved. And some things will mean more to one city or county than others, but that's why it'll be there, so that it'll be things that you can pick and choose as leaders. I'm pretty sure I'm not going to be here at 2050. I don't think I'll be here at 2040, but
we'll visit you in the home if you want.
That's right. Like one of our other Commissioner Smith always says, we all sit in the shade of some trees that somebody else plants. And so that's where we are. We have one more item, sir. Informational item. Julie Bjornstad is going to walk us through some scenario discussion on the 2050 plan. She's going to provide an update on what has been happening in the Wasatch 2050 process, especially with regard to the transportation land use scenarios and the upcoming small area meetings.
Sorry, there's like a bird that just turned. I know
it's at me or at someone. It's a little bird. I mean, you can't kill it.
At least it's got two wings.
Maybe not the bird.
Well, I appreciate a bird flying all the way out from school. So I'm just going to give you a brief update on how the WRFC is developing the scenarios for the Wasatch Choice for 2050 vision. Hopefully by now you're familiar with this graphic showing the process that we're taking to develop that vision. We're starting by developing scenarios. That's what we're doing currently. We're going to be evaluating and testing those scenarios on the goals that Ted has presented, working back with our communities to refine those three scenarios into a preferred scenario. Again, refining that and evaluating more to come up with a Wasatch Choice for 2050 vision. So how do we develop our scenarios? So we went out to the cities and counties. That's not even looking. and our transportation partners, as well as key stakeholders in the region, to get their feedback on project ideas and growth concepts that they like to see in their communities. So this included where major centers were going to occur, where they like to see transit projects, where they like to see new trails or bike paths, as well as roadway expansion or operations projects. So we took our feedback that we heard from the communities, developed sort of key themes between different scenarios and kind of grouped them into the three scenarios that you see here. In more detail, these are sort of the key differences between the three scenarios. Now, although we kind of put a theme up here, what this says isn't necessarily the only thing that's included in that scenario. So when we say something is regional centered based, that doesn't mean that we're not also including village and town centers throughout the region. So the three scenarios that we'll be testing based on their performance and how well they meet our goals are: scenario one is basically our existing regional transportation plan extrapolated out 10 more years in terms of employment and population growth. So we've included any sort of updates from general plans that have happened over the last 4 years. We've included the 2015 to 2040 RTP projects, both phase one, two, three, as well as our unfunded projects, and then the priority bicycle routes for active transportation. We're comparing that against two sort of new scenarios, one being a scenario that's based more on the growth of regional centers. And these regional centers would be connected with more capital-intensive transit projects, so think higher capacity, rail, BRT projects, supplemented with a roadway system that's more connected and more operations and management focused. So instead of necessarily, we will have capacity improvements, but we're focusing more on managed motorways and how we can improve what we already have. And then that's supplemented through an active transportation system that is supportive of our transit network, so more first mile, last mile projects. And then the third scenario is, instead of growing mostly in these large regional centers, kind of spreading out that center growth into more town and village centers, connecting those through more service-intensive projects, such as more bus routes that are maybe higher in frequency, and then supplementing that with higher capacity roadway projects. On the active transportation side, we're looking at separated regional bike facilities, so that would be more trails, more off-street network. These three scenarios will then be evaluated based on the criteria that Ted mentioned and the goals that you guys just approved to see how well they're performing. The evaluation will be done both at a regional and a sub-regional level, so we'll really be able to, when we come back out to communities, kind of talk about how you as a local community are performing. So that kind of takes us through sort of round one of our process. Round two, which is the scenario choosing, is what we're about to embark on. And so that basically is taking the three scenarios, how they're performing, back out to local communities and our transportation projects to talk about the outcomes that we saw. That will happen through a set of scenario workshops early next year, where we looked at how our land use and transportation scenarios performed. Flipping pages. We can see the correlation between our investments on the transportation side and whether we were able to meet where we would like to see centered growth. And we'll be able to talk about the trade-offs between the outcomes. So did this help reduce housing and transportation costs? And to get those reductions, what else, what other measures were effective? So in these workshops, we'll be looking to get feedback from our local communities on the projects that we tested, on the outcomes. And it would be great to get your support in encouraging both your staff and your elected officials to participate in the next set of workshops we'll be having.
Julie, can you just interject here for 1 second? I want to emphasize the point that Julie's making about the fact that we're going to be coming out to your communities again, and most of you have participated in these so-called small area meetings or sub-regional meetings. We're going to be coming out again to get your feedback in the groupings that you see represented in the different colors on the screen. The reason that's so important is we are a regional agency, but we don't know what's best for your communities. We want to come to you with good information and a lot of good thinking and technical expertise. But what's most important is hearing from you at the local level. What's important? What are you trying to achieve? And then we can work with you and explore these scenarios, again, not just from the entire region, but at a sub-regional level. So it's a ground-up process that starts with you and your staff and the other elected officials and community leaders, you know, in your towns. And so participation in these is essential to developing good regional plans as we go forward.
Andrew, yes, sir. The one thing that might be helpful too is to maybe part of those meetings a review of last year, what was decided. I think it's important for these regions to see what did we do previously, then let's build on this year what we're going to do.
That's great, because the process actually goes over 4 years. And so to start with, how did we get here, what did we do already, and then how did that translate to what we're showing you, we will make sure we do that. Thank you.
That was sort of the end of my presentation. But so if anyone has any comments about how we develop scenarios or what we're testing, feel free to ask.
Can I ask one question? So how do you deal with, like, issues in West Valley City on the south side of 201 are not probably much different than the issues in Salt Lake City on north of 201, but how do you sort of interact with those, even though they're separate breakout meetings? How do you kind of deal with those cross issues? And, I mean, do you just note them up there so that they can see that the other side had this question? Do you somehow solicit them to cheat and come to the other group's meetings? Or?
Okay,
If you don't mind, Mr. Chair, we will not just have results cut off at the boundary of a small area. So we'll talk about regional results. We'll put up maps that show the effectiveness on different quarters as it goes outside of a study area. But the other part of your question is, well, you know, what about the communities right outside of that? And so we have been inviting communities that feel like, look, I really want to be part of the conversation in this other focus area as well. We've been doing that. And so if you take a look at the small area boundaries, and for any of your communities, and you think, okay, well, the focus of the conversation for my community is in, you know, South Davis County, but I'm right on the border, and I would like to sit in and be part of the conversation in North Davis County, for example, then we can certainly accommodate that.
And Carl, it's a part of our job as staff, and also part of, you know, our job, your job in regional development, to then take all the feedback we receive at the local level and weave it together into a countywide or a regional. So, you know, that's part of why we have jobs, is to do that kind of work. So.
That's a justification.
Anything else for Julie? Mr. Chairman, that's all we have.
Thank you. Let's move to item 6, the Transcom Committee, Mayor Applegarth.
Thank you. Ben is going to make a presentation here for us, and if you have in your packet, if you note the resolution under item 6, this is a resolution that we are going to have part of an action part when we get to that. So Ben, we'll turn the time to Ben for presentations and questions that you may have. Ben, please.
Thank you, Mayor. It's kind of an exciting time. As you'll recall, this body took action back in August, and they approved the 2017-2022 TIF. During the month of September, there were no meetings for the regional council, nor on the council level, nor TRANSCOM. And here in October, we've had a request to modify the Transportation Improvement Program, or amend. So this is amendment number one, and there's actually 13 projects that we'll run through fairly quickly. In your packet, you'll have a copy of the resolution, and attached to that packet, or attached to that resolution, is a list. There'll be three sheets of paper, and each sheet will identify several projects. As you may know, and if not for the Transportation Improvement Program, it's a six-year program that identifies projects, both highway and transit projects, that are funded over the next 6 years. They address our long-range as well as short-range needs and to maintain and preserve our existing system. So if you were to look at the very first table attached to that resolution, there'll be three projects on there, and these three projects have adjustments in the scope as well as in their funding. The very first project on there is located, this is in northern Davis County. It's actually on the 650 North I-215 or I-15 interchange intersection area. This particular project is currently programmed on the Transportation Improvement Program for improvements to the intersections around the interchange. This request is for additional rehabilitation work on the off-ramps on the interchange there at 650 North. It'll also address some change in design along the intersections there on Main Street that were identified as concerns from the business sector. So the request here, or this particular board mod, is to add an additional $1.1 million, bringing our project estimated cost to just under $7 million. This project will move forward in the years 2017 and 2018. The next project is actually located in Weber County and northern Davis County. This involves the improvements to the areas between the ramps or auxiliary lanes that they're noted for. There are four locations. The first location here going from they went from this spot to that spot. This actually goes from 193 Fisher up north to 650, and it'll address the east side of I-15 on the auxiliary lane. The next section will go from 650 up to, the last one was on Antelope Drive. This one will go from 650 up to 193, and it'll actually address the lanes on both sides of the freeway. And then we have the lanes going a little further north from Antelope up to SR97 or 56 South. And this one will address the lanes on both sides of I-15. Currently, there's $1.3 million on this project. The additional rehab will require an additional $1.5 million, and this will be constructed during the year 2017 or next year. The next project that's located here is also in northern Davis County. This is on Hillfield Road. This is to complete this particular project. As some of you may be familiar, there's been a lot of construction work in this area.
All too familiar.
Yeah.
Move past it.
We'll go right past. Actually, we'll zoom in because this is an applaud for the department to finish this project up. They have identified ways that they can wrap this up before the end of the winter, and it's to change from a concrete to an asphalt HMA, and what this will require is an additional $1.5 million so that this project wraps up before winter. The next project, then you'll come to your next sheet here, and that'll identify. Now there's two types of improvement. The first two we'll talk about are for additional funds, and then the last one on this page will identify or talk about some transfer of funds. So the very first project here, some of you may be familiar with the area. It was referenced a little, and this is on the West Davis Corridor. This particular environmental document has been going on for some time. The request is for some additional funds so that this document, as it wraps up, they're requesting $1.5 million, bringing the total project cost for this environmental document of $16 million. The next project is located in Southern Davis County. This is actually in North Salt Lake, also referenced in a prior discussion there with Davis County. This here is on the Beck Street. This is from 89 on the I-15 northbound. This is a bridge rehab. This particular project, because of the complications of traffic management and safety, they're putting additional funds, an additional $500,000 for this project to wrap up the rehab and the design on this particular bridge structure. You'll see this is a structure that comes from 89 going to I-15 north. So a significant project as well, small amount of money, but should buy quite a bit of safety improvements as well as the traffic management. The next project here actually is also down at, well, this is down in the southern end of Salt Lake County. Now this is the third one. This is a transfer of funds. This is the area where some of you may be familiar with is the Porter Rockwell Boulevard. Bluffdale City has been doing an excellent job in the past of doing a lot of work. They've been preserving right-of-way. They've even been coming to this body requesting funds and sections of this particular facility. The initial phases of these projects have been completed or are underway. Because there's a transfer taking place, that this particular facility here will go to the state, and this particular facility here will eventually be the city's facility, UDOT is going to pay Bluffdale for the work that they've done, or reimburse Bluffdale for the work that they've used their local funds on this facility. It's a total of $8.5 million, and this request is for that initial portion of that reimbursement of $1.5 million. A great project, a lot of effort on both the department and the city. Well, that brings us to the third sheet. And all of these projects on this one are new projects. These projects actually represent the transportation alternative programs that have been identified in Region 1 area. Now, there are seven projects on this that are in our area. There are more projects that are identified, but they're outside the Wasatch Front Regional Council area. But we'll run through these seven fairly quickly. Well, that was pretty quick. There we go. All right, so the Region 1 TAP projects. Now, if you look real close here, because of the extent of the Ogden Lake urban area, we go all the way from North Salt Lake all the way up to Brigham City, so quite a large geographical area. There are, in the TAP program, that Region 1's program, there's just under $1.5 million. The local match was just shy of $1.3 million, and the programs are spread over 2017, 18, and 19. In the Wasatch Front area, these seven, there's three in the North Salt Lake area, one in Farmington, two in Kaysville, and one up in Brigham City. $716,000 in TAP funds. Local match is about $180,000 in match. And these projects, most of them are done in 17 and 18, and there's one project that will be constructed in 19.
Ben, just remind us what TAP pays for, what type of projects.
Thank you. So transportation alternative program funds are those funds that are used for recreational, they're used for non-motorized, pedestrian and bicycle type facilities, safe routes to schools, sidewalk improvements or expansions. Those are the kind of projects, alternative transportation modes are what they're mainly used for. So running through these seven projects, the first project is here in North Salt Lake. This is on Redwood Road. In this location here, it's 1100 and Redwood Road. On this particular facility right here, this will construct a missing sidewalk bike path facility here on the west side of Redwood Road, about 600 feet from 1100 North here. The total estimated cost is $81,000. The TAP funds being recommended for this project are a little more than $60,000. Can you see that?
Yes.
And in the local funds are about $20,000. Now the next project is actually the other half of this project, and it's on the east side of Redwood Road, and it runs about 575 feet from 1100 North. Estimated cost is $75,000. TAP funds being appropriated for this project or programmed as $56,000 plus, and the local match is just under $19,000. The next project, I might mention, the last one was 2017, and this side is 2018 on this particular. The next section is also a project located in North Salt Lake, and it's on Orchard Drive, and it's up near Center Street, and it goes to 8300 South. It's in this location right here. This is a facility that lacks sidewalk. A lot of the new development here that the mayor referenced earlier, this is the elementary school that's right here. And so this project will implement sidewalk here, taking the students. Currently they walk in the road up here to the crosswalk and then cross over here to the school. Estimated project cost, $257,000. TAP funds being recommended are $192,000+. And the local funds are just under $65,000. We then move on to an area in Caseville. This is also to construct a section of missing sidewalk here on Main Street. This is between Nichols Road and 700 South. This particular facility is right there. The estimated project cost is $44,000+. TAP funds being recommended are a little more than $33,000, and the local match being applied to the project is a little more than $11,000. The next project is also located in Caseville, and it's in the Botanical Gardens, right in that particular area. And what this is to pave a section of a missing road that will connect sidewalks. And it's located right in that location there. Estimated project cost $145,000+. TAP funds being programmed for it is $105,000 with the local match of $40,000. Then we've got a project that's on up in Brigham City. This one here is on Forest Street. This Forest Street right here, the rail crossing comes in right here. And what this is to address, you can see the park facility here. There's a lot of traffic through here, but there's not much to address anything for ped and bike. And the estimated project cost is a little more than $222,000. The TAP funds being programmed is $197,000, with the local funding being $25,000. Then the last project that's being requested is here. It's in Farmington City. It runs along the frontage road. There's improvements to both the east side and the west side. Further to the south, Centerville City has done some work on the frontage road that will address some bike facilities on the west side of the frontage road. This project is to address missing sidewalk as well as provide, maybe let me back that part up here. Real quick before my sign covers it, you can see down here where it tapers off. That's where it'll go down to the park, and then at the park is where it'll dovetail into the project that Centerville is doing on the west side of the frontage. Some of this area is to address sidewalk on the east side of the frontage road. Over here is the new high school that's being constructed. There's an asphalt path that runs along the west side of the frontage road. And this is to address missing sidewalk on the east side of the frontage road. Estimated project cost is $70,000+. TAP funding recommended is $70,000+. How did they get out with a local match of zero? Don't know. I'm sure that they'll pay with something. But that was the recommendation for the TAP programs, and this is the board mod for the 2017-2022 TIP.
Thanks, Ben. Any questions or comments for Ben? Seeing none, Mr. Chairman, I would make a motion to pass the resolution in our packet entitled Amending the 2017-2022 Transportation Improvement Program.
Second. We have a motion and a second. Any more discussion?
I'm sorry, who was the second? Thank you.
Seeing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you. Moving on now to our item is air quality, and no air quality, we did active transportation with Commissioner Milburn.
Great, thank you. I think Mayor Caldwell must be out doing active transportation or something today, so that's why he's not here, but happy to fill in and give a quick report. Maybe just a little bit of start off with a little bit of a year in review. We had our final meeting on October 12th, which was held in Lehigh in conjunction with our final mobile active transportation tour. And we appreciate everybody that's participated this year. And maybe to kind of give you a brief on what we've been working on is most of our work has been centered around developing a performance measure report card. And we anticipate that'll be completed by the end of the year, and will be sent out to all the committees for review, and look forward to your input and for your information there. And we'll be kicking off next year's meetings with our first meeting on January 11th, and I hope to see you there. Another thing to report on was the Utah's first pedestrian summit, which was held October 17th at the Ogden Eccles Conference Center. And there were over 150 participants with sessions focused on pedestrian safety, ADA accessibility, and how our transportation partners are working together to better plan and implement our pedestrian improvements. And it was a rounding success, and anticipate we'll hold another summit again in 2017. As I mentioned earlier on the Active Transportation Committee element, we've been holding those in conjunction with our MATS, or Mobile Active Transportation Tours. And this year we had the opportunity to do tours in Bluffdale, Logan, Salt Lake City, and Lehigh. And so we had over 100 participants. And participants of all ages, abilities, and even various stages of pregnancy. Muriel was, she's an expectant mom, but she's right out there riding with us and setting an example. It was awesome. And if your community is interested in hosting one of these mobile active transportation tours, please contact Scott Hess here at WFRC, or Phil Sarnoff from Bike Utah, and we'll get you on the list, and you can show off your community and the mobile active transportation opportunities in your area. And then finally, just a little bit on the Tiger Grant update. The process is underway to refine and prioritize the Tiger project list. And UTA is working diligently with its partners to gather additional project level information, which includes more defined project scopes and revised cost estimates, funding availability, and project readiness. And this information, local communities should get this information back to UTA by mid-November, at which time the project team members will review the information and we'll pull together a list and provide a master list so we can get moving with the grant agreement process. So that's the group has been active. They've been very engaged. It's been a lot of fun to be involved with this committee, and look forward to another productive year coming up in 2017. That's our report.
Thank you, Commissioner. Moving on to item 9, the Executive Director's Report.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think that we're going to need to try to end our meeting by 3:30, judging from the crowd that's thinned here. But I'm happy to say that for those of you that have stayed, we're handing out grant funding to everybody who's still here.
Be present to win.
Must be present to win. Right. Of course, I'm kidding, but I mentioned this already before. We are doing receiving the letters of intent for all of our funding and technical assistance programs, which total about $40 million for the region. And we wish it was more, but we're just so happy to be able to assist you in your communities. You have in your packets, and I think we've sent this out, a calendar for meetings for next year for all of our various committees. We will send electronic appointments to all of you for everything, also, well, not for everything, for the committees that you serve on. But everybody's welcome to everything, but we'll send that out. Looking forward to a great year next year. I do want to note that still this year, our Transcom is still scheduled to meet, and we changed the date from the original schedule in the year. It's November 10th, and this is one of these things that we're going to just keep telling everybody over and over again and hope it works in the calendar, November 10th. I do also want to note, we've talked before about our plan to move our office, to move the WFRC world headquarters from here, the International Center, to somewhere that is more centrally located and accessible by multiple modes of transportation.
Bluffdale.
There you go. We're taking a vote now. We put out an RFQ to solicit a broker to help us. I do want to express my appreciation to Carlton for the advice he gave us in going through that process. Thank you very much, Carlton. So we're going to be bringing a broker on and moving forward to accomplish the goal that you as a council set for this year, which is to move our offices, not just make progress on that. The last thing I want to do is, Matthew, if you could bring up that, every year our friends at USDOT, FHWA, and FTA do a review of the planning work in transportation that we do here in Utah, not just for WFRC, but in Utah. And I just want to note, just very briefly for you, the findings that came out. And you'll see here how proud we are of this, of the work we all do together. They said, the process by which transportation plans are developed in Utah continues to be recognized as a best practice nationally. It serves as a case study for the Everyday Counts Initiative regional models of cooperation. They noted a few other things that we wanted to point out to you. The unified plan, our performance, our movement towards, continued movement toward performance-based planning, the Transportation and Land Use Connection Program that we talked about before, which really is a partnership, you know, funding from Salt Lake County, partnership with UDOT and UTA to help translate these visions and plans into reality at the local level. All the work that we're doing in bicycle and pedestrian planning, Commissioner Milburn was just talking about the Tiger Grant that really came to our region or is coming to our region because we have done so much work to lay the groundwork for having active transportation be a viable mode of getting around, not just driving or taking transit, and it really fits in all together. And then we're always working on public engagement, trying to make sure we have really good, solid public engagement. And we made some real strides for the TIP. Ben manages the TIP, and Ben and Muriel and other folks on our team working together, we increased the number of comments we got on the TIP 20-fold through some enhancements we made, online comments and such. And so we just wanted to share some of those things with you and thank everybody that has participated in all of that to make these things happen. And Steve from FHWA, thank you for your partnership on behalf of your agency as well. Thank you very much. That's all I've got, Mr. Chairman.
Any other business? Some of you are hanging around to say something. If not, motion to adjourn.
Second.
We're out of here.